Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And how would you like to be forgotten on the internet? Maybe you know about the European High Court ruling this month that forces Google and other search engines to consider requests to remove links that might be seen as violating people's privacy rights. Well, today's New York Times has an article called Right to be Forgotten? Not that easy. It contains some stories of people remembering how they'd like to be forgotten and some of the complexities of that effort. Danny Hakim wrote that article and joins me now from London. He is the European economic correspondent for The Times. Hi, Danny. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And some listeners may remember all those times you were on with me as the Albany bureau chief for The Times. So if you're now the European economic correspondent, congratulations on your liberation.
I appreciate it. I actually kind of miss Albany a little bit.
And I lived in Albany for 8 years, so I'm allowed to say congratulations on your liberation. I sometimes miss it, too. So remind all us colonists over here what the European High Court ruled about a right to be forgotten.
Well, the European Court of Justice, which is the High Court, made a ruling several weeks ago that basically enshrined a right to forget for Europeans. So it forced tech companies, search companies like Google and Yahoo, to really create a systemic way for Europeans to apply to them to get links removed to stories or content that they felt violated their privacy. Now, what that means is obviously complex. So, companies like Google have been working on ways to implement that. And today, Google actually came out with a form that Europeans can use to submit these requests.
What does it look like?
Well, it's a fairly simple one-page form. You have to, you got to have an ID and enter a lot of your personal or some of your personal information. You've got to, put the URLs that you want to be removed, and then the process goes from there. It's not clear to me, how long this will take or, what you could expect after that. But it seems like a fairly simple way to start it.
And you cite examples in your piece of a mother in France trying to have photos of her scantily clad daughter removed, a doctor seeking to take down negative reviews, watch out Yelp, an actor seeking to expunge links to articles about an affair he had with an underage girl, a Romanian woman wanting to delete access to records of her divorce, a former politician in the UK wanting to do away with links to a book that he viewed as defamatory toward him. Is that representative of the landscape?
Well, I think what was interesting to me, as you noted, I moved fairly recently to Europe. I think what was interesting to me is that this kind of thing has been going on for a while in Europe, and Europe has a much much stronger history of defending privacy rights. Actually, all of the European Union member states already have data privacy agencies where citizens can turn to and make these requests already. I think what's interesting about the court ruling that's very different is it really puts the onus on Google and companies, the search engines also, to get involved and really create a systemic process to deal with these requests. But these kinds of requests have been actually going on for years, and that's something that I kind of discovered as I went along.
So, listeners, would you like this right in the United States? And tell us your stories. How would you like to be forgotten online? 212-433-WNYC. What's out there that you think is too unnecessary, too old, too defamatory, not your fault, whatever, that people might find if they Google you? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. How would you like to be forgotten online? By the way, as John Oliver pointed out on his show, it's now the case that the only thing that shows up on Google for all these people who went to court to erase their history are stories about what they did that they want to be forgotten for.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. It's very hard to unring the bell, as it were, and I started my story with an anecdote about an Irish university student who was falsely accused of skipping out on a cab fare. A cabbie in Dublin put up a video of someone skipping out on a fare, and someone said it was this kid, and it actually was not this kid. This kid had been in Japan at the time. But he got just pilloried on the internet, so he went to court in Ireland he sued Google and Facebook and everybody basically to try to get his name back. I mean, he was totally innocent, but he's been fighting in court for years, so it's a very it's very difficult to unring.
And now everybody in Ireland knows his name. Everybody in Ireland knows his picture, and when they see it or see him, they'll think, "Oh, that's that kid who." Let's see. Did he do it or did he not do it? I forget. So, and in
right,
the age,
and I just wrote about him in the New York Times. So.
Exactly. In the age of social media, though, how far is Google required to go down the rabbit hole of sites or people that pass these links to others or tags or likes or whatever that expands out to more and more others?
I think that's the question that really has to be worked out, and I think it's a very new thing that Google is still trying to figure out. I mean, they also have just announced that they're creating a big, advisory committee to sort of sort this all out. So I think that's one of the questions that remains to be seen. And what was interesting about the case itself, it was based on a Spanish lawyer who wanted, a link deleted to a very small article in a Spanish newspaper from 15 years ago. I think it was about a 35-word article, and it wasn't even an article, really. It was just a notice that said his home it was sold. There was a forced sale of his home to pay a debt. So, we're talking about a 35-word notice in a newspaper and he was just going after, links to that. It showed up high on his Google search list. So, I think people are going to be trying to completely clean some of their records, and that'll take some time.
Ziad in Washington Heights. You're on WNYC. Hello, Ziad.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. This is a really important subject, especially for people who are in the field of, defending. For example, I defend the civil rights and the constitutional rights of Muslims in New York, and there are hate groups. Federally recognized hate groups that make it a point to target anyone who defends Muslims, for example, because they're an Islamophobic hate group, and they just they create links, they write complete falsities, things that have no true basis whatsoever, call you a terrorist, and they create these links and have their followers connect to these links, and then it becomes really high, because that's the way it works on the internet. And so they've really strategically become sort of internet assassins. That's what I call them.
But there's a real can of worms here, Ziad. What would you want the standard to be? Would a court, or would you leave it to Google to decide what's actually a falsehood and what somebody's political free speech rights take on something or somebody?
The political free speech rights, the caveat with, the interesting thing with that is we have the freedom to completely lie about somebody or mislead or intentionally misinterpret, so to speak, and misinform the public about that person and what their intentions and their work is. So though we have the free speech and we want to protect that, obviously, there still is that paradigm where people can actually mislead intentionally the public into thinking that you're a bad person when all you're working for is the very foundation of what this nation stands for in the Constitution and our rights.
But could it
That's a really tricky question.
Would you be afraid that it would also work against you? Like if you labeled a particular politician an Islamophobe, let's say, and that politician says, "That's a lie. I'm just for certain policies of search and detain or whatever it is that I think are needed for the protection of national security," then that politician appeals to Google to take your link down. Where do you stop?
Well, that's what I said. That's the interesting thing, and I'm really curious to see that form as well, the one that's being created in Europe, because I want to see what the criteria is for validating the points that are made. Like I said, These are federally recognized hate groups that are targeting people who defend Muslims. And my partners are Jewish, and they're Christian, and they're Sikh, and they're Mormon, and we all stand together in solidarity to fight against hate and to fight, you know, to fight to protect our constitutional civil rights. And it doesn't matter what faith you come from. These groups attack us all. In fact, that was a very that was a link that we talked about. I mean, that was a conversation we had recently. Someone said, "I'm Jewish, and I'm being attacked." A Harvard professor said, "You know, I wrote this article based on the truth, and now I'm being attacked by all these hate groups because I defended Muslims."
Right.
And so we had this conversation recently, and everybody's going, "Gee, it doesn't matter what you are. If you protect this particular segment, and there's a hate group for that segment of people, you're always going to be attacked." That's really interesting.
So
that's the trick.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Well, and here's somebody with a very different kind of story of something she'd like taken down. Gail in Red Bank, you're on WNYC. Hi, Gail.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, what's your story?
Well, I had a girl that was working for me while I was in the hospital. Her name was Christine Floyd. She was in the police court, she was found guilty of stealing. And when she did get this report from the court, then she went on the internet and she wrote all these things about me. I have an agency called Wine and Dine, and I do reviews in the Daily News, New York Times, Asbury Park Press, and Star Ledger about restaurants. And she wrote that I was a fake and all that. And that day it came out, I was in 5 newspapers, and so I called up Google, and I tried to email, and I tried to do all kinds of things to get this off, and nobody's interested, and I do not know what to do about it.
Gail, thank you very much. And, of course, I can't vouch for any version of her story, and she named somebody's name, so who knows, but there's a case where at least Gail says somebody who was convicted of a crime posted false things about her, and it's hurting her business. So she could do something in Europe. Danny Hakim, very briefly, because we're going to run out of time, give me about 30 seconds on this. She could do something about this claim in Europe that she can't do here?
Well, I think, you know, in terms of an American doing something in Europe, I mean, you can, if the content is hosted in Europe, potentially you could do something. But this ruling really only applies to Europeans and taking down content and links in Europe, so it doesn't apply.
Right, but if her whole situation was in Europe,
yes, she could absolutely.
Rich in Plainview, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Well, I think that things like this are kind of terrifying because, of course, there's always people who, you know, have perfectly valid reasons for wanting these things taken down, and those are the people that are used as examples to get the policy passed. But then it's really just open to the highest bidder. I mean, you know, Rupert Murdoch over there recently got run through the mud. I'm sure he would love to have a bunch of links taken down. You know, BP can eliminate promises that they made to clean up the Gulf now that they're packing it in. You know, politicians can eliminate past scandals. It's essentially allowing people to edit the truth.
Could there be a line that you would agree to between editing the truth and editing falsehoods? We've heard the last two callers brought up things that they said could be shown as demonstrably false, but they follow them around online.
Well, the problem with that is, as you said, who then gets to determine truth and false? Now, does it have to be proven in a court of law? Does Google get the right to decide? Because Google might just decide on what's the loudest. Whoever complains the loudest, that must be what's true.
Right, or the path of least resistance for them. So in our last 30 seconds, Danny Hakim, who does get to decide? And does Rich's call exemplify a different set of values that's dominant in the United States as opposed to in Europe?
Well, I definitely think there's a different set of values. I mean, privacy has been, I think the European tradition has been one that's much more, in favor of individual privacy. And you can see that going back for, you know, more than 100 years. In the story I wrote, I have a sort of an anecdote of Alexandre Dumas, you know, the author of The Three Musketeers, fighting to get back some photographs that were taken of him. So, you know, it goes on for a long time in Europe. As for who decides, I really think that's still that's still being worked out. Even the form that they've posted is just a very initial.
Danny K. Hakem, liberated as the former Albany bureau chief, now the European economic correspondent for the New York Times in London. Fascinating. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.